This is a People First Radio podcast.
Stephen Montero is reminding people your phone is not your friend. The Concordia University professor is author of Needy Media, How Tech Gets Personal. Writing in The Conversation, he said that the suite of features possessed by modern phones and smartwatches situate them as a uniquely intimate, sensitive, and knowing presence in our lives. I spoke with him about what he feels we should do about it.
I'm Stephen Montero. I teach in the Department of Communication Studies at Concordia University in Montreal.
And you've suggested that there are a lot of people out there right now flagging concerns about the issues society may be having with social media or with AI chatbots. But you think we also need to focus on hardware. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. So as you said, the discussion around smartphone use and device use and the internet, it often tends to focus on our use of or access to different kinds of content. So social media is a big one. Gaming is another big one. More and more, the use of AI is another one. But my perspective is that we really need to focus, that we're only getting part of the story with that. And we really need to focus as well on the devices themselves and how we interact with the devices and how that can build this sort of sense of companionship or sense of intimacy between us and the devices.
So what are some of your specific concerns with the devices that maybe lead us to have that dependency?
Yeah, so I outline a lot of this in my book that was just published, Needy Media, How Tech Gets Personal. And really what it is that we see in smartphones, but also more and more in things like watches as well, smartwatches, is a whole host of different kinds of technologies and interfaces that sort of position the device as something that knows us and has sort of an animated relationship with us. So the kinds of things that I would talk about in that regard are face recognition and face recognition locks, touch screens, and how the sort of the interface behaves as we touch the screen. Geolocation, vibration alerts and chimes, the different sounds that the device makes. And then also there are things, different types of sensing like motion sensing and attention and awareness sensing. And all of these sort of come together and produce one, a really sophisticated technological device, but also a device that interacts with us in all sorts of ways that, say, the phones of 20 years ago or the watches of even 10 to 15 years ago never would.
How much are your concerns around all of this tied up with the idea of data harvesting?
Well, that's an important part of it. And that goes to, you know, any sort of activity that we have when we use one of these networked objects is that they're constantly pulling data from us. And so I would argue two things. One is that what this produces is that we reach out for the device oftentimes when we're not even sure what we're going to access through the device, or if there is something that we need to access through the device. So we end up actually interacting with the network oftentimes when we might not otherwise, but we have that sort of longing or desire to interact with the device. The second part of this is that what this produces, because of these kinds of sensors that are on the device itself, is that the device actually can be collecting data about us even when we're not tied to the network, connecting to the network, right? So even if we're not using data and data is off, for example, we turned off, that, or we have it in airplane mode or these kinds of things, that the device can continue to collect data on us, both if we're interacting with it, but even, and this is particularly troubling, even when the device is just sitting there, you know, like next to our bed or on the table or on the sofa next to us, that these sensors are working all the time. And so they're collecting information about, for example, our motion or our lack of motion. And these are sort of sold as awareness features, right? To make the device better suited to our activity and know when we need it and when we don't need it, right? But it really makes the device itself something that is aware all the time. And so that's a lot of data that's collected, and it's collected even, when we're doing things like sleeping, right? There's still this data that's been collected about us. And that raises really important privacy issues.
Now, if you're someone who takes issue with the stuff you've just said is happening, but you still feel like you want or need a smart device, a smartphone, what can you do?
Right. Well, first off, this is the sort of corner that we've gotten ourselves into, is that more and more we really do need smart devices and portable smart devices that we take with us everywhere to just do our sort of everyday tasks, right? Like, it's very hard now, for example, someone who's looking for a job, when you apply to jobs and that, you have to be ready at all times to, to take that, text from a potential employer for an interview or something like that. And same if you're looking for housing, or if you're doing your daily banking or these kinds of things, or trying to find your way around in the world. I mean, the maps that we use now are these maps that are, embedded in these devices or apps that we get through the network. So it really isn't a question of, whether we should use these devices or not, because really we become so reliant on them just to go about our everyday lives. However, just because we're reliant on them doesn't mean that we should necessarily behave for them the way that they want us to behave, right? To have the kind of relationship that the devices are built to have. And what I mean by that is, we do have the option with these devices of being able to turn off some of these features or to limit some of these features so that they don't have access to us all the time. And really, that way, it allows us to protect ourselves some, both in terms of our needing the device, because we have a sense that the device, really has sort of this kind of rich interaction with us, but also in the sense that we can keep some of our life a bit more private and not share as much, right? Because we all know with like social media and that when you're sharing things, yes, you're sharing it with your friends and so forth, but you're also sharing it with the social media, platform, the corporation behind it, and that's something that's talked about a lot, right? But also this sharing, even when we're not using the device, that we really have to, one, start thinking about that, and two, think about ways that we can control that. And as I said, as we control that, it also may potentially help us control the urge to pick up our phone every, 10 minutes or 15 minutes, just to have an interaction, right, with some kind of lively thing, which is the phone.
Could you tell me more about this idea of sharing when you're not using this device, as far as what we know about how that is actually happening, and what people can do to mitigate against it if they don't want it to happen?
Sure. So we have this is the part of the problem is that, we can have a relatively good sense of the sort of data that's being collected by the device. We don't always have such a good sense of how that data might be archived, or how that data might be used by the companies that manufacture these devices and these kinds of things. But if we think about an example that I would give is something like sleep scores and these kinds of things. So oftentimes the phones will collect information about our motion and also about sounds, right? So if we're quiet or if we're snoring or something like that, and the device, which as I said, might be by the bedside, it would collect this data, and then in the morning it might give us a sleep score. This is something that's fairly common with the kind of health and wellness apps. that you find on these phones that come with these phones, right? And so a couple of questions you might ask is, one, do I need that, right? And there certainly are people perhaps who having a sense of how well they slept is important in terms of tracking sleeping disorders and this kind of thing. But for a lot of people, that probably is something that they don't need, right? So one of the things that you might look at is open up the health app or the wellness app on your device and look at the kinds of things that it's tracking and think to yourself, do I need this to, do I need this to be this sort of data to be collected or not, right? And the other thing, the good thing about this is we can always revisit this. I mean, we can always go back, if we decide, if you turn something off and then you decide, oh, I really would like that, or you may need it in certain cases, you can always go back and turn those things back on, right? So it's not, it's not an either or kind of situation. You can use these things when you need them. Another example I would give with people is like geolocation, right? So using GPS and things like that, that it's potentially on your phone, you could have it so that it's basically collecting that data all the time. But then you can also set it so that it collects that data only on apps where we really need to share our location for them to work. I think part of the problem, again, with this idea that we get close to our devices and start to think of sort of our bond with our device as a special sort of bond that we don't have with anybody else, is the way that through something like geolocation, that we see that dot on the map on our phone, let's say, and we see it as being equivalent to us. When that dot on the map, it's not us, it's actually the phone interacting with, say, cell phone beacons or other sort of networked infrastructure.
What do you think is the consequence of what you just said? We see that dot as us, but the dot is actually the phone.
Well, what it does is it makes it very hard then for us to sort of live without that because it's a reinforcement, right? It's something like it just in the same way, when you use it for navigation or something, it's comforting to see that dot, right? Because it shows us that, that we exist. It shows us within a certain context and these kinds of things. And it's all coming through the phone, right? But what I would say is we also have to realize that it's also in our face-to-face relationships with people, right? That we feel grounded, that we feel safe, that we feel that we're needed, right? And so part of what happens, I think, is we get some compensation for that from the device itself, which perhaps makes us less likely in certain circumstances to seek out those sort of live physical face-to-face interactions with people in all sorts of ways. And I'm not talking about just in terms of, say, sort of profound relationships with people who are very close to us, but also thinking about relationships, just the everyday sort of relationships of interacting with people at a coffee shop or something like that. To give you an example, you go into a coffee shop or a fast food restaurant or something like that, and you may possibly just, complete your order on your phone, right? And then pick up your food without interacting with anybody, right? That kind of changes the whole sort of social fabric of society when we do that all the time, right? You do it sometimes when it's crowded or something like that. That's one thing. But when we do it all the time, it breaks down that kind of social bond that exists between us and others. And as I said, it's not a question of not having a phone or using a phone that doesn't have any of these capabilities, but it's being aware of that and taking control of how we use these things so we don't lose those bonds with other people.
On that idea, where do you draw the line, or how do you think about the idea of individual versus collective responsibility on this?
Right. Well, that's a really good question. And now, in terms of thinking about things like your data security and these kinds of things, that we could say that there are certain individual responsibilities But also what we could say is that we have, we have corporate responsibilities as well. So for example, one of the things I point to often is that when we get these phones, oftentimes a lot of these kinds of tracking features or features that will sort of enhance our interaction with the device and relationship with the device, that a lot of these things are on, and it's up to us to go and turn them off, where we could have some more warnings or things that are not turned on in the factory, and then we would have the opportunity later to turn them on. There's also the question of government responsibility, and I think government responsibility here would really fall on the privacy side of things. Right. So if we have stronger regulations in terms of data security for people, and make platforms and make manufacturers more accountable, right, then this as well will help stem the tide. And as I said, it's not about getting rid of any of these kinds of features that we have with these kinds of devices, but rather being able to take control of them and being able to, and also being aware of exactly how they work and what they do.
So if I'm thinking of takeaways from this, it might not be a bad idea to take a look at my phone, do a little bit of active critical thinking about the things it is tracking and decide whether I want it to track the ones I can turn off. And then even beyond that, just to just have a more conscious and intentional relationship with my phone, even when it comes to something like, say, ordering at a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, one thing that we could be aware, and maybe your listeners could have this, is to just think about, say over the course of the next 24 hours. I mean, when do we pick up our phone? When do we reach for our phone? And why do we do that, right? Like, what are we looking for when we do that? And just being a little aware of that can help us in terms of, what are we comfortable with that? And if we are not comfortable with that, what sort of strategies might use to combat that? Sometimes it's something as simple as turning off some features. Other times, it may be just getting some time away from your phone, right? So there may be times, particularly at certain hours of the day when you're at home, where you can go for an hour or so. Without the device, right? So you might just put it in another room in your house, right? But definitely awareness is a key, being aware of how we use these things and why we use them in different kinds of circumstances. And then second, really thinking about, what is it that we actually need. An important thing to think about this is that we may feel that when we reach out for the device, that the device needs our attention, that it has something to share with us, right? That there's something we can get from that interactivity with. And the device is not an animal. The device is not a human being, right? The device does not really need anything from us. It's just something that's kind of built up in our psyche over the past few years, that there's something more to it than just a piece of plastic and glass and metal that can access a network, right? But that's what's sort of built up within us in the past few years. And it's important to get back to that. This is just an object of glass and plastic and metal, and yes, it can do some amazing things, but it's not our friend, right? We may feel in some ways that it is our friend and we have these connections, but it's not our friend. And everything that we share with it, right, is collected and potentially can be used in other ways that we don't know, both today, but also we have to think about the future, right? What other sort of ways our data might be used in the years to come.
Stephen Montero, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Stephen Montero teaches in the Department of Communication Studies at Concordia University in Montreal.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.